Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You are listening to the Life Autistic Podcast with Ryan Summers. When I hit my 40s, after a lifetime of thinking, what the fuck is wrong with me? I finally discovered that I was undiagnosed autistic. This podcast is my journey, my discoveries, learning about autism, about my autism, about life with autism, and having conversations with other autistic adults, sharing our experiences, relating to one another. And hopefully anyone listening can learn a little bit about us, learn a little bit from us about the life autistic. Available on any podcast app that you use. Hope you enjoy, and give us a shout if you got questions or comments. Thank you.
Okay, I'm recording. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Okay.
So,
hi.
Say hi.
Hi.
There it goes. Yep, it's recording. So I'm talking to Joyce. Joyce is in Kenya.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that the internet's holding up because Joyce lives in Kenya and I live in a tiny little town in Canada. And we both have spotty internet at times, so.
Yes, we do, yeah.
So, Joyce, what were we just talking about? We were just chatting a little bit before I started recording, and I just wanted to sort of cover a little bit of that again before we kind of move forward, because I'm really loving the conversation that we're having.
Unique position where I happen to have had interacted with people on the autistic spectrum, and then I ended up being in a relationship with somebody on the autistic spectrum.
Yeah. So you first reached out to me, I want to say, I don't know, a month or two ago, like.
Yes.
You discovered the podcast somehow?
Yes. Well, I had been listening to the podcast for a while, yeah. And then I followed you on Facebook, and then I reached out to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm neurotypical NT, yeah.
So you identify as a neurotypical NT.
Yes, definitely. Neurotypical, yeah.
The first thing I want to say is thanks for listening, and that's really cool. And I have to say, I'm just blown away that like somebody living in Kenya found my humble little podcast. That's like so cool to me.
I know, yeah, the power of the internet, yeah, I know, right? Technology, links of, yeah.
It's so cool, and as much as I hate the internet sometimes, and I get all like, I'm going to quit everything and go live in a cave somewhere and meditate and get off the internet, like it's so cool.
Yeah, we're more alike than we're different, yeah.
We are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you were just telling me a little bit about yourself. And do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself again, just for anyone who might be listening?
I'm 34 years old.
Yeah.
I was born in Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Okay.
I lived all of my life in Africa, but I've been to London for 2 years, but that's it. The rest of my life has been in Kenya.
Okay. Did you go, like, how old were you when you were in London?
25 to 27.
Okay. Were you going to school there or just working there?
Well, no. My dad went to uni to a doctorate, so I was with him for 2 years.
Oh, and then I came back. Very cool.
Yeah.
And so what you said you're 34?
Yes.
Yeah, and like, what do you do for work or for your life or?
My bachelor's was in psychology.
Okay.
In Nairobi, and I now work for a human resource. You know, HR, human resource company.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. But yeah, my bachelor's was in psychology. Yeah.
Okay. Now, like, you and I have been chatting on the WhatsApp chat app for, I don't know, a month or two now, and having some pretty cool back and forth. And I've just been sort of blown away by your insights, like just some of the stuff that you've said. And this is interesting because, you know, I've just found your
this is what is interesting is that when I lived in London, when I went to be with my dad, I worked in a I don't know what you call it, where they take the learning disability kids, the small kids. It's not the public school. They have a special school for special kids with special needs.
Okay.
Right? So I worked there, and I worked with autistic kids, and my experience of the autistic kids is that they had sensory difficulties, in the sense that they were excessively sensitive, they were excessively sensitive to light, to sound, to smells, to human emotions.
Yes.
So if I was with an autistic kid and I was calm, they were themselves. They spoke to me more. They were able to be themselves a little bit more. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's almost as if their real personality came out if the sensory world was muted.
Yes.
If you get my drift.
100% I get it.
I don't know if you understand, but it's almost as if autism is a disability of hypersensitivity.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier, because I agree with that 100%. I feel like it's oh, I think it lost connection there. Now it's trying to reconnect to you. Just pausing here as the internet, we've lost the connection, but we're trying to, the app is trying to reconnect. Call has failed. I'm going to try to call back, see if that works. Let's see. Thank you. This is technology. This is cool. This is like me and my little tiny. Oh, here we go. Are you back?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, good. I was just saying it's this is technology, and it's like me and my little cabin in the woods in the country in Bayfield, Canada, and then you across the world in Africa. It's really cool.
In Africa, in Nairobi.
Yeah.
I wish you can come visit me in Nairobi.
Well, you know what?
Anyway.
You asked me earlier if I'd ever been to Africa, and I said no. But now I know somebody there. So that's
so. Yeah, so now you're more invested. Yeah, so my experience with the kids in the center that I worked in was that if you could somehow reduce the intensity of the sensory information coming to them,
yeah,
you would see them at their optimal performance, right?
Yeah.
And that meant reducing the sensory overload in the sense of sight, smells, loud volume, and even more important was emotional sensitivity.
Yes.
In the sense that I realized with this kid, if I came in and I was maybe having my period and I was in a bad mood, they picked up the mood I was in.
Yeah.
As if it was there. I don't know how to explain it to you, but they picked up whatever it is that I was expressing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it was. It's very weird that I came back to Kenya, I forgot about it. I went to uni, I went about my life, and then I met this guy who happened to be on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I should speak about him, but...
Well, don't say anything if you're not comfortable saying it, you know, and...
Well, he's the typical... typical ASD presentation. He's 47, very accomplished in African standards, in the sense that he's high in a government office.
Yeah.
But he's unmarried and he has no children. He seems to be very unsuccessful with personal relationships.
Yeah.
I met him through a best friend of mine, and he was known to be very abrupt, very arrogant. The way they described him was somebody who was arrogant, dismissive, who would essentially have a temper tantrum. And basically, people were afraid to approach him because he was very, you know, emotional.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is, because, I don't know, my temperament is a bit calm. Around me, he would be mellow.
Yeah.
And then I picked up on the fact that he was behaving around me the way the kids in England used to behave around me.
Yeah.
In the sense that... In the sense that the kids in England would be, would sort of take on whatever you're projecting. If you're angry at them, they would be angry back. If you're calm, they will be calm. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I picked up on that. So, you know, needless to say, I became very attached.
Yeah.
And he became very attached.
Now, did he know he was autistic?
No, he doesn't even know.
Oh, he still doesn't.
He doesn't acknowledge it. No.
Oh, he doesn't. So you've diagnosed him, but he's not aware of this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
I picked it up the first day I met him because of the stimming thing.
Interesting. Did you say because of stimming?
Yeah.
What was it? What was he doing for stimming?
Official thing.
Oh.
Like a repetitive. Yeah.
Like squeezing his eyes or something.
His mouth. Yeah.
Mm.
Mm.
That's interesting. Mm. Now, like this, actually, that leads me to wonder. Like, what is it like in Kenya? Is an autism diagnosis common there? Is it not common? Is it getting more common? Like, is it? I know here, like, there are a lot of people, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and up that were not diagnosed because they weren't really looking for it when we were all in school. Nowadays, it's more common for kids to get noticed and get that diagnosis early. How is it in Kenya? Like, are people aware of autism there? Is it in the public conversation?
It is in the conversation in the sense that, you know, all of us now have iPads, we have access to internet, etc. Having said that, I have to conflict my experience in England and my experience in Kenya. It's obviously a lot better than it was a decade ago, but it isn't. Sure. Yeah. It's not something the government is actively pursuing or actively investing in now.
No. Is there support for, like, kids in school, like, getting assessed at a young age and getting support, or is it still not there?
It depends, because, you know, the thing about the developing world is that everything is dependent on your net worth.
Yeah.
So if you can pay for it, then you will get the assessment, and then you will get the special sort of care. But if you can't pay for it, then you don't have access to it.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not, like, paid for in the school system yet?
No, it isn't. No.
Okay. So that's, like, I guess that's one thing that we're certainly lucky here, is that our school system is public funded and there is support.
Yes.
Which is...
And like I said, my first interaction with autistic kids was in England in an institution that was taking care of specifically kids that were on the spectrum.
Sure.
And that is how I interacted with them. That is how I knew that autism, as far as I'm concerned, is a disability of high sensitivity.
Yeah.
As far as I think.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier, and I very much agree with you. And I think when people talk about the sensitivity of autistic people on autistic brains, you know, we're very aware in the conversation of the sensitivity to, like, bright lights and sounds and strong smells and these types of things. But I don't think there's enough conversation about the emotional sensitivity, because I do think that plays a huge part. And it's almost like...
Do you agree with me, though? Do you think that is an aspect of ASD, the high sensitivity to emotions? The people around you.
I agree as far as, like, yes, I think that's my experience. It's sort of strange, because people talk about autistic brains as, like, as if... And then one of the common things they say is, like...
about low empathy, etc. And I don't agree with it. I think that you have so much empathy that it sort of makes you shocked to not being able to act.
That is, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say the exact same thing. They talk about autistics as lacking empathy, but I feel like it's like an over... It's an overly strong empathy. And it's like the empathy is, like, so strong that it sort of shocks the system and overpowers it. Like, kind of like imagine, like, electricity, like getting an electric shock, and then everything shuts down because it just kind of, like, short circuits. And that's been my experience, I find. Like, is I
It is something that neurotypical people cannot relate to, because neurotypical people are able to sort of lie about, because I think people on the autism spectrum, the kids that I worked with had an intuitive knowing of how I was feeling, so I couldn't fake it with them.
Yeah.
But with neurotypical people, you can fake it. So with my sisters and my mom and everybody else that is neurotypical,
yeah,
I can be feeling like crap and then sort of have a smile in front of them. Mm-hmm. And then they will respond to me based on what I present to them. But the autistic kids that I dealt with, mm-hmm, and this is why my outlook on autism has always been different. It's because,
yeah,
the autism kids I dealt with sort of had an intuitive knowing of what I really felt.
Yeah.
Regardless of what that I presented.
Yeah.
And the neurotypical world is sort of based on these lies and falsehoods and,
yeah,
presenting what it is you want people to think, what it is that you want people to know about you. So it's really difficult for somebody on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Because A, you can't lie. B, you can't lie to yourself what you perceive of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult of you to have a relationship with a neurotypical person, because NT relationships, I'm sorry to say, are based on a lot of falsehoods.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed that too. Like there's a lot of, I notice even in my relationship when sometimes I would say something and then she would say, like, assume that I meant something else. You know what I mean? And I'd say, and she'd say, well, you really meant this. And I'm like, well, no, if I really meant that, I would have said that, because I actually used the words that I mean.
Because,
like,
honesty isn't acceptable in a neurotypical.
What's that?
Honesty isn't really acceptable in a neurotypical relationship.
No, and I've always found that confusing. It's like, I don't understand why people don't just say what they mean. Like,
it isn't. Yes, honesty isn't really acceptable in an NT relationship.
No.
Because, so this is difficult for me to express, because I have experience with ASD. Like I said, I worked in ASD with ASD kids for a very long time, and then I know the NT dynamic. So
yeah,
the NT dynamic is about knowing what my lie to myself is.
Yeah.
So I'm probably size 12, right?
What's that?
Okay, I'm size 12, yeah?
Oh, sure.
But in my head, I'm size 10, right?
Gotcha.
And then my boyfriend.
Oh, it cut out.
And then he has to tell me that I'm size 10, not to offend me.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter whether he knows I'm size 12. It doesn't matter whether the rest of the world knows I'm size 12 or 14.
Yeah.
He knows the kind thing to do is to tell me I'm size 10. This is an acceptable way of being in neurotypical relationships.
Yeah, which sounds so confusing to me.
Bizarre, yeah, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
So there's so many rules,
yeah,
in the NT sort of thing, which is what throws, when I'm NT, as attempt to have a relationship with somebody on the spectrum,
mm-hmm,
even when you have very good intentions, because your brain is wired on the size 10 lie sort of thing.
yeah.
When it shocks you, it throws you. It's impossible to, because I honestly thought I was the I was the one person that was equipped to be with somebody on the ASD spectrum.
Yeah.
I really did.
Well, it sounds like you would be because you have that experience, yes, you have that insight, you have that knowledge.
Yes, theoretically. I know the theory. I know how the ASD mind works, right? Yeah.
So do you want to get into that a bit? Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience dating somebody who has autism? And obviously, like, for the sake of privacy, we won't reveal any details about the person, but do you feel comfortable talking a bit about it?
Yeah, ask me a question. Ask me anything.
Because we were chatting, and this is why I'm fascinated by this, because you are an NT person who has just ended a relationship with a person with ASD, and I am an ASD. I am an ASD.
Ended it.
Oh, you haven't. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm still hopeful.
Okay, I'm sorry. And I'm an ASD person who was with an NT person, and our relationship is we're separated right now. So as far as I can tell, it's over. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I wish it wasn't, but there we are. It's been funny, our chats back and forth, our messages, because it's just, I feel like we've been asking each other questions, and it's like, so yeah. Okay, let's start with the positives. What are some of the things that you love about this and this ASD person, and then what are some of the challenges you face?
Okay, the thing that I love is that I'm very aware of how difficult it is for him to navigate personal relationships. Yeah. So I know he's not going to cheat on me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard enough for him to deal with one woman.
Yeah, yeah.
He's looking up to 3, 4, or 5. So, that's amazing for a neurotypical woman.
Right? So there you go.
that for me is the basic, right?
Yeah.
The second thing is he does tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Like if I've had a weekend of indulgence, and then I say to him, "Oh, have I put on a few pounds?" He will tell you what he thinks. He's not gonna lie to you. He will tell you, "Oh my God, you've eaten a bit too much." You know.
Yeah.
He doesn't think to lie before he tells the truth.
Yeah.
And neurotypical men lie even before they know what the truth is. So a guy on the autism spectrum is a bit of a shock because he tells you the truth because he doesn't think to lie. And then because as I said to you, I think of ASD as a disability of hypersensitivity.
Yeah.
And for me, that means that they're hyper-empathic, hyper-everything. So they're going to take care of the people in their lives a lot more than neurotypical people because they feel the pain of the people in their lives a lot more than neurotypical people would. And I thought I was high empathic until I encountered people on the autism spectrum, to be honest. People on the autism spectrum feel a lot more than any neurotypical would ever feel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then we go to the negatives.
Or the challenges.
Yeah. The challenges.
Yeah.
Number one is rumination.
Is what, sorry?
Rumination.
Rumination.
Yeah.
Can you expand on
rumination
that?
Rumination is going over something in your head for years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
So somebody that wronged you in 1997,
yeah,
you can still give me the exact details of what they did, when they did it, how they did it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Like rumination, you go over something over and over and over and over and over, years and years and years.
Yeah.
And you can tell me how it happened, when it happened, and it happened 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
So you can tell me about his exes and what his exes did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's rumination.
Mm.
And basically, rumination keeps you in a negative mentality, revenge, being wronged, victim mentality.
Yes.
Type. Man. Yeah, so that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is emotional reactivity.
Yeah.
I do not. You know, people say meltdowns, shutdowns, whatever.
Yeah.
Excessive emotional, negative display of emotion, which freaks neurotypicals and makes you, it freaks out neurotypicals and it makes them flee from you and leaves you isolated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rumination is bad because it's bad for you. And then the emotional reactivity is bad because it makes people run away from you. So you're isolated.
Yeah.
And then the rumination also makes you have a negative perception of yourself.
Yes.
And then you're less likely to... Because neurotypicals don't, we don't have such, we don't ruminate as much. So if you broke my heart, tomorrow I will call you an asshole and I will move on, right?
Yeah.
So I'm more likely to preserve my own self-esteem and then go on to find another job, etc., another relationship, etc.
Yeah.
But an AFD person will be ruminating 20 years down the line,
yeah,
about how they were fired from some job, about how they were heartbroken, etc. So they never move on from it.
Mm. Yeah.
So you might be way more intelligent than I am, but you won't get as many relationships or as many jobs as I do. Because you can't let... Essentially, you're more idealistic than I am.
Yeah, so that's something something you mentioned to me earlier, and I did want to ask you about that. You said more idealistic. So what did you mean by that?
Because the thing that I have seen with the kids that I worked with and this guy that I ended up dating... Oh my God, I think I'm supposed to write a book or something.
I think you should.
I think the biggest difference between neurotypical people and people on the ASD spectrum is that you do not expect injustice.
Yeah.
No, for you, it's way more traumatic than it is to a neurotypical person.
Yeah.
So you think about it endlessly because you don't expect it, you do not accept it.
Yeah.
You think about it for hours and hours and end.
That is something I can completely relate to because it's like I've had experiences in my life where like people I trusted took advantage of me or stole from me or
yes.
did thing or
yes.
or
well,
like and it's like
that's
every time it every time yes. it. Sorry, let me just, every time it happens, I'm like caught off guard and I'm surprised and I'm
yes.
traumatized. And then everyone around yes. me just says, well, you should just protect yourself or get used to it or just assume people are going to do this stuff. But I never learn the lesson. And every time it happens, I'm just like completely surprised. And yeah, it's like traumatic. And then everyone's like, well, just get over it and move on. And I'm just like, how is this normal for you people? Like, it's fucked up.
Exactly. That is the thing that, and this is why I say I'm so different, because I work with kids on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Is the fact that they didn't expect people to be mean to them.
Yeah.
So when we were walking on the street, right, and then a driver walked past and splashed water on them, they were shocked by it.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe that another human being can just touch water on a human being and go on with their lives as usual.
Yeah.
But neurotypical kids didn't think the way that autism spectrum kids think.
Yeah.
The neurotypical kids think, you splash water on me, I'm going to pour mud on you.
Yeah. You know, you just made me think of something there that
revenge.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So neurotypical kids think, oh my God, you did this to me, I'm going to revenge you. Autistic kids are shocked by this act. They take about 2 months to process it.
Yeah.
And first of all, they deny that it was deliberate.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't do that to somebody else.
Yeah.
So they deny that it's deliberate. And they never come to a point where they accept that it could have happened on purpose.
Mm. And you know what? You just...
And this is why I tell you that I think of ASD as an issue of hypersensitivity.
Yeah.
Because these kids are so pure. They're so believing in humankind and goodness that they don't believe somebody can flash mud on you deliberately.
Yeah.
Neurotypical kids accept it and then they say, I will get mad and throw it at you.
Yeah. I just thought of something like with what you're saying that I think it is that I never really thought of before, but in what you're saying of like how autistic kids will sort of be like surprised when they see
shocked
and they'll be shocked and then when they're like bullied or they're victims of something, it's like a shocking thing.
Yeah.
But then because they're autistic and they're different, they might actually get bullied more often as well. So it's kind of like a double whammy. It's like you're getting bullied more often and it's also more traumatic. And I think that's why a lot of autistic kids grow up and they have like sort of symptoms of like post-traumatic stress and things like this because of these kind of behaviors.
Yes. Because they don't expect it.
Uh-huh.
They don't.
I know when I was young, I was very much like I had sort of an idealistic view of the world. And yeah, like when bad behaviors would confuse the hell out of me and I just...
I completely still do.
I completely still do. Like I always assume the best of people and then...
You can't shift.
What's that?
If you're on the ASD spectrum, you're idealistic by default.
I think that's mostly true. I think there can still be autistic people who are assholes, you know. I don't want to take that away because
they can be and I've seen a lot of it on the internet.
Yeah.
But it's reactive. It's reactive.
Yeah.
It's never you know the way they say OCG who went and blew up blood school without being... That is never an ASD. An ASD can react, but they will never initiate. When somebody on the spectrum has been traumatized long enough, and this is what I'm worried about in my own instance, is that the guy I'm with, and this is very possible. You can get post-traumatic stress syndrome to the point where you're too dysfunctional to have a normal relationship.
Yes.
That is very possible.
Absolutely. I think that's actually very common.
Yes. And that is what I worry about about my own instance and with the guy I'm with.
Yeah.
Because I find that if you were to take a sample of human beings, I'm very mellow. I'm not reactive. I'm kind, especially because I know where he's coming from.
Yeah.
So I'm not reactive. And yet, he finds things to react to.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible to be so traumatized that you cannot operate normally in the world.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is what happens to people who've been who've been in war.
Yeah.
And they come and they're beating up their wives, they're beating up their children, and they can't be reintegrated into normal life, right?
Yeah. Well, we
so,
talked
yeah,
we
that is my
What's that?
That is my worry, that the trauma of being in a world that isn't neurologically like yours can take you to the point where you're no longer able to have normal relationships.
Yeah. And I think that I think that is very common, because I think you build these, like, through all these traumas, like, you build these, like, survival mechanisms and different things that you do, and these and these, like, negative beliefs, because we talked about this earlier, like, you spend your whole life living in a world that is constantly telling you that you are wrong, that everything that comes natural to you, like your natural ways of thinking and behaving and being, it's reinforced that those are not acceptable. So who you are is not actually acceptable to anybody. So you have to constantly try to pretend to be someone else to be accepted. And then every time you make a mistake and you don't do that properly, you're then shown again that you're not accepted, or you're not correct, or something's wrong with you. So you do kind of internalize all these beliefs. Like, I know in my life, I've internalized all these negative beliefs about myself, that I'm not good enough, and that I'm not worthy of love or any of these things. Because there's something wrong with me. Like, I was born broken. But, you know, I'm kind of working on all that stuff right now with my coach, like, trying to undo all that stuff and like, figure it out and overcome these negative self-beliefs and the behaviors that they lead to.
Yeah. And then you see your siblings, people you went to school with, everybody's getting married, everybody's having children, everybody's being able to navigate normal relationships.
Yeah.
And you're wondering, what is it about me that I can't do that?
Yeah.
And if I am standing here and I'm telling you that there's nothing wrong with you, actually, what is different about you is that you're idealistic and you're too good to be in this world.
I've often felt that. I really have.
And the only reason I know this is because I worked with those kids.
Yeah.
And because I was able to be there for about 6 months, and I knew that with these children, you can't fake. Because with neurotypicals, you can fake anything.
Yeah.
I can be feeling like crap and smile at you, and you take my smile of what it is that I'm feeling. But with kids on the spectrum, they seem to pick up your emotions more than what it is you're portraying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what that mechanism is. Like, I wonder how they're picking up those emotions. Because autistic people, like, we have a really hard time reading tone of voice and body language and all these things accurately, but it's like, so how are we picking up this intuitive emotional sense? Is that something I'm fascinated by?
Let me tell you, if I hadn't worked in that place, I couldn't explain it to you.
Yeah.
I couldn't explain it to you. But what I can say to you is that those children knew how I was feeling in spite of what I was trying to portray.
Yeah. But how did they know?
That is the reality.
But how did they know?
I don't want to sound new edgy and say there's an energy or an aura or whatever. I don't want to say those things. that neurotypical people don't have access to. I can take that to the bank.
No,
and that is the reason why I was interested in my guy, who I knew from day one was on the autistic spectrum.
And this is something that what you just said fascinates me, because this is something that I sort of like intuitively know, but I also have like a very, like, I believe in like science and everything. So like part of me just goes, well, that just sounds crazy, like new age stuff. But then in my heart, I know it, because that's how I've felt my whole life.
Yeah.
Like I just have this sense.
And that's why I said, my name is Wamboi, I'm from Nairobi, I know it's some new energy, I tell you it's an energy, or an aura, or something.
Yeah.
All I know is that I couldn't lie to the kid.
Yeah.
And all I know is that I cannot lie to the guy I'm with.
And what did you say, autistic people pick up something that neurotypical people, what did you say?
Yes. I told you, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
As far as my interaction with people on the SD spectrum, I think of people on the autistic spectrum as people with hypersensitivity.
Yeah.
In the sense that they pick up on things that neurotypical people can't.
Yeah.
So and how I knew this is because I told you my bachelor's was in psych, right? And my temperament is usually happy, bubbly, calm person. But as a woman, I have days when I'm not as calm, as bubbly.
Yeah.
And the kids would pick up what I'm at. If I'm calm, they would be calm.
Yeah.
They would pick up my energy. They would pick up, and they want, some of them weren't even speaking.
Hmm. Yeah. So even the nonverbal kids. Some of
them were nonverbal. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was a way I could look at him, and I would know what it is that he wants, what it is that he needs.
Yeah.
And some of them, I would hold his hands and he would come down from his meltdown, shutdown, whatever.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, I felt like I was the Aspie whisperer.
Well, you sound like one to me. It's crazy, because I, like, the text messages we've been going back and forth with for weeks now, it's like I have these text conversations with you. And I've said to you a few times, I'm like, how do you know so much? Like, you just, like, I would say something and then you would just reply back with exactly the thing I was about to say next. And I'm like, how do you know? I don't understand. You are like a autism whisperer.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah. This is the mystery of life.
You mentioned before that you should write a book. I 100% agree with that, and I think.
No, I shouldn't write a book. Don't encourage me.
No, I think you. I don't know. I just get this sense. I get this sense about you that you are going to be an ally for us, and I get that sense.
The thing is, I had this weird opportunity of dealing with kids in the autism spectrum when they're really young.
Yeah.
When they're not, when they haven't been traumatized.
Yeah.
When they're still idealistic, when they still have faith.
Yeah.
When they still believe in the goodness of the world.
Yeah.
So when they experienced me, they were willing to trust me. Because the thing that I'm experiencing now, that I expected would be, you know, easy, because I've dealt with the kids, I thought that my boyfriend would be a walk in the park, but it isn't.
No.
Because you cannot minimize the trauma. I told you he's 47. You cannot minimize half a century of trauma.
No, you can't.
You can't. So he's not willing to give me the leeway that those children want.
Yeah, He's built up too many defenses.
Yes, he has. And unfortunately, I thought I could, but I don't think I can.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Unfortunately, yeah. That's the reality of where we're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, oh, it's hard, you know, man. It's hard.
Yeah, because trauma shapes people.
Yeah.
Trauma can make people monsters. And all these autistic people that have blown up houses, that have done this extraordinary thing, it's because of the trauma they've experienced. It's because they've been rejected over and over and over. It's because they've been told,
yeah,
your sensitivity is wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
But I've had the unique experience of seeing autistic kids before they had the trauma exposed to them.
Mm.
And they're very idealistic.
Yeah.
They're very loving. I can go to the point of saying that when they were, I can say this and swear on whatever spiritual book you want me to swear, the Bible, etc. But when an autistic child trusted you or felt safe around you, they interacted exactly the same way as a neurotypical kid. You couldn't tell the difference. There was no meltdown, there was no shutdown, there was no nothing.
Yeah. Yes. This is something that, that touches on something that I think about too a lot, is that I feel in a weird way when I'm around people that I'm 100% comfortable with, I feel less autistic, which is so strange to say. And yeah. I don't know.
When you're around people you feel completely safe with,
yeah,
this is my experience, that when they were around you and they felt completely safe with you, you could not distinguish them from a neurotypical kid. You really couldn't.
Yeah.
But they had to feel completely safe with you.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I'm concerned, autism is about hypersensitivity. It's about hyperanxiety.
Yeah.
It's about all these things that makes them unable to be themselves around unsafe situation.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you currently do any work with autistic kids or adults?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Do you have any plans in that direction?
No, I don't. I met this guy that I fell in love with, that was frustrating me to no end.
Yeah.
Because I tried to do with him what I did with those kids.
Yeah.
I was as calm as possible. I made him trust me as much as possible. And around me, he would be normal. But as soon as I left, he would go back to being weird, as people defined him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he would be weird with me as well.
Hmm.
If I wasn't around him.
Yeah.
When I'm around him, weirdly, I can sort of mute his, I don't know if there's a word for it, but I could bring down what neurotypicals think as, you know.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that there's an irony to that, because sometimes the people that you're the most comfortable with and the most, like, you feel the most safe with, You then are in a calmer state and maybe not showing, like, autistic traits as much. So then, like, for me, I've discovered that in my life, as I've discovered my own autism and sort of come out, oftentimes it's the people who are the closest to me who don't believe me, because they're the ones that would not see it as much. Does that make sense?
Because your traits are more visible when you're a bit stressed out, when you're not yourself.
Yeah. So, like, the clerk at the
somebody, you wouldn't express the straits.
What's that, sorry?
I said when you're around people that make you feel calm,
yeah,
your traits are not as visible, yeah, as when you're in an anxious situation.
Yeah. It's like the person working the counter at like the grocery store might mm-hmm. look at me and think I'm a total weirdo because I'm bouncing and stimming mm-hmm. and I'm talking funny and I'm doing all these weird things. But then I don't do mm-hmm. those weird things when I'm around like my best friends or my close family because I've spent decades getting to know them and feeling comfortable. So I'm in a calmer state.
And they accept you. And the thing I realized about ASD is acceptance.
Yeah.
The more, because the thing I acknowledged about this guy that I'm dating is that he's ridiculously intelligent.
Yeah.
He's about, I'm intelligent myself.
Yeah.
I won't lie to you. I did very well in a London uni.
Yeah.
He's about 30 or 40 points more intelligent than I am. He has a doctorate from London School of Economics in Medicine.
Yeah.
And yet he cannot wash a sufuria, a pot.
You can't wash a pot?
No! He cannot take care of himself in the house.
Yeah.
He can't.
See, so it's funny because I totally like relate. Sorry, what?
Yeah. He has intelligence in some areas and he's completely useless in some areas.
Yeah. That's how I feel too, because I grew up, I was identified as a kid as like gifted and like I'm mm-hmm. I'm in the you know, top 2% IQ wise if you believe in those measurements, and I understand things, like I can read things and understand them. I'm smart, I'm creative. But like as far as like running like my house, like paying bills on time or keeping a clean and organized house or just like basic day-to-day stuff, remembering to do laundry or like I just basic sort of executive function day-to-day stuff, like I'm completely helpless. I just get lost in it, I get stressed out by it, I can't figure it out. Simple things I just get so overwhelmed by, but yet like, you know, things that require intelligence, like solving puzzles or looking for patterns or things like that, I'm great at.
Okay, so you remember my name, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy. If there's one thing I want you to take away from this conversation,
yeah,
is that intelligence that you cannot quantify is 3,000 times more valuable to human beings than that dishwashing, arranging your clothes bullshit that you're worried about.
Yeah.
So never ever allow anybody to tell you anything different. Because the reality of the NT experience is that we can never see what you lot see.
Yeah.
And you have to believe in what you bring to us because it's ridiculously exceptional. You have to believe in how exceptional it is. I'm obsessed with Bill Gates. I'm obsessed with Warren Buffett. I'm obsessed with all those people. And they're all autistic.
Yeah.
They are all autistic.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett's wife left him and went to San Francisco because he can't have a conversation. You need to understand the value that you bring to our lives that we can't see if we didn't have you guys.
Yeah.
You need to understand that. And I'm in this bizarre position where I do understand it.
So you need to understand the value you bring to our lives that we can't.
Huh?
No, I'm just writing down what you said. You need to understand the value you bring to our lives
Yes, you
that
need
we
to
can't,
understand.
That we can't see. What was it? We can't see. We can't see.
We cannot see. We really can't. The neurotypical brain cannot see that.
Yeah.
It is so... 90% of the neurotypical brain is devoted to social interactions.
Yeah.
And you have to understand your value.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. You...
If you remember anything, if you remember my name and you remember anything about that, my conversation with you,
yeah,
that is it.
I'm gonna tell you something right now.
Don't worry about anything else. Just worry about what it is that you do differently and do it well.
I'm gonna tell you something right now. You are the first guest on this podcast that has made me cry.
Oh,
because the last 5 minutes, you've just made me cry, because what you've said has been so powerful to me and so kind and loving and empowering and like a reminder to like focus on what's good and what is valuable and not keep beating myself up for not meeting like other people's NT standards of things, and just to like I'm crying right now, and I can't thank you enough. Like you are the whisperer, and I love you and I appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh my God, really? That's amazing. Yeah. I was afraid that we wouldn't understand each other with my Morona accent from Central.
No, you've just had a huge impact on me in this conversation, and I can't oh thank God. You enough for that. It's been very wonderful and powerful. Thank you.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, I reached out to you asking you a question. And you replied. So it's amazing. I guess it is a global village, right?
It is. It's
the
brilliant.
Fact that you're talking to somebody that was raised in central Kenya.
I know. It blows me away.
And we can understand each other.
This has made me love the internet again.
Yes. Yeah. And it shows that we're more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
Somebody in Nairobi is struggling with a partner that is on the spectrum. And I was listening to your podcast of
Hey everybody, this is Ryan. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you got something out of this show. If you'd like to support this podcast, please do so. You can find us on all social medias at The Life Autistic. Look for us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Please like, comment, share, send us questions, thelifeautisticpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please reach out. We are setting up a Patreon account soon for those who would like to support. We've had a number of people message and ask me how they can support this podcast, which is much appreciated. And I do currently have something set up on the site called Buy Me a Coffee, where you can throw a few bucks our way to help us with producing the show. So anyway, again, thanks for listening. Reach out. Would love to hear from you. And take care. Peace. The Life Autistic.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.